Place to Be Nation, we are back after a hiatus since we didn't do a WrestleMania reaction show, but we are here for Payback. I'm your host, Chris Zellner, joined, as always, by the great Devin Hales, and who was at WrestleMania, which is why we didn't do a reaction show, and just about everybody else around was at Mania, too, so it is what it is, but anyway. We're here to talk about Payback. Devin, what's going on tonight? How you doing, brother?
I'm doing good. Just kind of keeping an eye out for the storms and stuff. It's been kind of crazy around here with that stuff.
Oh, I know
but, other than that, it's kind of hanging around as the warm weather arrives, just kind of chilling.
Yeah. It's that time of year in the South, you know, when this weather happens. And I know right here where I live at, we've been avoiding serious weather left and right. It's been and up and down. It's been around us, but thankfully we haven't had any come to us.
Yeah.
So, knock on wood on that. So anyway, there was some stormy weather on this show tonight in more ways than one in one match. But let's start off with the pre-show as we have Gallows and Anderson against Cass and Enzo. Kind of a shortish match. Enzo getting his ass kicked pretty much. And then eventually broke down. All four guys got in the ring. Enzo was in the Magic Killer, but Cass broke it up. And then Enzo cradled Gallows for the three count. Devin, I tell you, these two teams, they've fought each other so much. I would dare say this is the end of their little deal, but it seems like they're married to each other, so who knows?
Yeah, I think it's very likely an exaggeration, but as we were watching the show, I was like, I swear they've wrestled each other 15 or 20 times since their brand split. Like, I know this is like their third or fourth pay-per-view match against just one another, I think. I think they...
Knock out multi-teams.
Yep. Not even counting the multi-tags. You know, I think they had a singles match at Hell in a Cell, singles match at Fastlane, if I'm not mistaken. So it's just like... I just get kind of sick of this matchup. The match was fine. It was too short to be anything special. But it was what it was. I just... feels like these two teams are kind of treading water a little bit, but
well, yeah, that goes to a question I got. I know Cesaro and Sheamus, more than them later, have talked about it this week, was that they felt the tag teams should have been shook up more too in the Superstar Shakeup. We had a couple of moves, but I think there should have been maybe a couple of more moves to really try to get some fresher matchups in these tag divisions on both shows.
Right. Yeah, I think so too. It's well, part of it is that, you know, New Day is a pretty big shakeup, but because of Kofi's injury, they haven't showed up yet. So it's just sort of, and they never really did any shakeups on Raw. I mean, they added the Revival, but that's over with for 2 months, you know, and then the Hardys. It's just, yeah, the
Slater and Rhino, really, who haven't even wrestled yet.
Yeah, I mean, Rhino worked a singles match on Main Event this past week. But, you know, it's like the shakeup was, you know, basically Slater and Rhino and the Shining Stars switched.
Yeah, now the colons.
That's right, yeah.
The colons. They're now on SmackDown, and they, you know, they lost American Alpha on SmackDown. But at least, you know, they got some TV time, and Rhino and Slater's just been hanging around doing shtick. I was thinking Alpha was going to move to Raw. If you got Alpha on Raw and then another team to go to SmackDown, I think that would have done a good enough job of switching the teams around a little bit better.
Yeah. I think so too. And the thing with Raw is it's the nature of how they write both shows, but you know, SmackDown, they somewhat pushed the colognes. But, you know, we bring Slater and Rhino, and they do nothing with them. So it's like, it's just, I don't know. It's really the ultimate solution is that they need to get these two teams separated from one another.
Yeah, because definitely. And I guess it'll happen soon enough. Who knows? Now, speaking of tag teams, the Hardys were backstage, and the Golden Truth came up. And they challenged the Hardys to a tag titles match, or the winners of the tag title match to a match. But the interesting thing about this segment was Matt Hardy, and we'll talk about this during the match, kind of doing that accent a little more, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah, he is. He's like a I think it was Dylan who referenced Tanner on Twitter. Tanner said he was like a broken Matt Hardy. he's like a malfunctioning robot from like the show Westworld or something. it's really weird, but yeah, it's interesting. I wonder if there's been some teases and rumors and discussions of the broken gimmick issue being settled or possibly being brought into WWE, so we'll see.
Yeah, and I'm glad that Goldust may be into something, because he needs to be into something and has been needing to be into something for a while. Truth is truth, of course, but if we end up getting a Goldust singles match with Matt or Jeff Hardy out of this, then I would definitely be very happy.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So, maybe something will happen down the line. But after what happened in the tag match tonight, who knows? We'll talk more about that in a few minutes. All right, next we get a interesting segment here. Miz TV with Finn Balor. And Miz and Maryse, of course, were awesome.
They were amazing.
As usual. And Balor came out, and the crowd was into him. And I thought, personally, that Balor did a tremendous job in this segment of, doing his promo and just the way he carried himself. I thought he was really good here. As good as he's been on the main roster, maybe as good as he's been on NXT too. I don't know if I can say he's got, he's getting his character down, but, a Balor Miz feud is definitely heating up, which is going to be nothing but good for him, I think.
Yes.
So, I was all for this segment.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. Balor's was, he was solid. He wasn't, he was inoffensive. If you see me on Twitter, I'm not a Balor fan. But yeah, I think he was fine. I think he did pretty well with his promo, which I think is key. I mean, to be a top star and to be,
absolutely,
you have to improve on the stick. He's gotten better, or at least this was kind of the first sign of him improving in that regard. I thought Miz was awesome in this segment. In fact, he's so good that Mama Hales, she doesn't watch wrestling very much at all. She'll occasionally step in and watch some segment and laugh at it and call it stupid. she was there because we were eating dinner, and she was like, this tells you how good the Miz is. She was like, God, I want to kick this guy's ass. He's full of shit.
Like, that's a great heel.
Yes, exactly. She was like, she was like, he's good because I want to beat his ass.
And see, that's what's so great about Miz's character there is that, Miz could work with just about any baby face.
Oh, yeah.
And get the feud over.
Yep.
On the promos.
He put Balor over on the promo, too.
Put him over big time.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, he's a pro at doing what he does. And, I mean, he is a total old school throwback in that way of not only getting himself over, but getting his opponent over, too. And, this is, when it comes to feuds right now, I mean, Balor and Miz is, that's a feud that I would definitely look forward to, because we know Miz is definitely really good in the ring, and
we know he can carry, and look, I like I said, I'm vocal about not being a Balor fan. He can carry people who I don't like into very memorable and good programs. Alex Riley, Damian Sandow,
Dolph Ziggler.
Dolph Ziggler last fall. Like, The Miz is extremely good at carrying feuds and programs, and making other characters and wrestlers interesting. This is a very good reset for Finn Balor. This is very good for him.
Yeah, and, you know, whether or not he turns heel down the line, you know, it is what it is. But, yeah, right now, definitely The Miz is a great step forward for him. So, I'm glad they did that. And they tease, you know, Balor trying to go for Brock down the line, too.
Yep, yep.
Which, that would be interesting if that happened. You know, that would be a good opponent for Brock to have a real showcase against. They can push, you know, Finn as being this, like, you know, David versus Goliath type deal, trying to beat the monster. And, you know, he could still lose, but, you know, if they do it right, he could come out, you know, still holding his head high and still having a good standing. So they're teasing stuff down the line for sure. So a segment that was very well done, that's for sure. All right, let me go to the main show. Kevin Owens, the face of America, defending his U.S. title against Chris Jericho, and what we all thought would be their last match. I thought the match was pretty good. I did like the callbacks of the match. I thought the stuff with the finger and the hand was great towards the end. I thought the build up to the finish was really good. And then the finish happened, and I was like, holy shit. I couldn't believe it. It shot me. So what'd you think of the match and the finish?
It was a good match. Like you said, I like the callback to the finger on the rope deal. The handwork was actually pretty good. No one did a good job of selling it, not being able to hit the pop-up powerbomb. The finish was shocking. Now, apparently Jericho's schedule is his last date is Tuesday, and his touring begins Saturday. I don't know if that's true or if it's just a rumor. It's an interesting decision. It's not one I'm particularly a fan of, especially if he just drops the belt back on Tuesday. I don't know. It was a very surprising result. I could see it being maybe a three-way, a backlash with AJ and Jericho and Owens, or maybe he'll drop the belt back to Owens on Tuesday, which would be really weird. I don't know what they're going to do with this. This is... I guess in some ways you could argue it's a good thing because it's unpredictable and nobody really thought that he was going to win, but I don't know. Looks like Jericho, if he does leave in the summer, will be back on SmackDown in the fall, which is interesting.
Yeah, but and the thing about SmackDown right now, though, is...
They don't need Jericho, for one.
They're babyface top-heavy right now.
Yes, yeah.
They have no top heels, you know, basically. Yep. Owens, Corbin, and that's it.
Yeah. Really? Yeah. I mean, you know, well, Jinder's getting there.
Jinder, they're trying. They're definitely trying, and it's going to be interesting to see how this goes along. Yep. For sure. You're right. But yeah, I mean, it is an interesting deal over there as far as on the heel side. Unless, you know, they try to turn Jericho heel, which I don't think that could happen.
Especially if they turn Charlotte face, but that's another discussion.
Oh, God, yeah. But, I mean, I don't know if you could turn Jericho heel, like, right now.
I don't know. I don't think you can either. You know, he's really popular as a face.
AJ's basically turned babyface.
Yep.
So you just turn him. Nakamura, in no way. Yeah. So yeah, it's gonna be and Orton, of course, is now a babyface champion.
And Cena's gonna eventually come back.
Cena's eventually come back.
He might just drop it on Tuesday and leave for 3 or 4 months or longer, even.
Well, if that's the case, then like I said on Twitter, I don't like it when they do stuff like that.
I don't either.
Because, I mean, I know more people are watching a TV show. I understand that. But you need to do the big matches on your pay-per-view, quote-unquote, shows. You know?
Sure.
Those are our monthly specials. You know, that's where you're supposed to do special things.
Right.
Not use that show to build up your television show. That's right. Backwards.
Yes.
So, who knows? We'll see what happens. Tuesday will be interesting for sure to see how they do that show. And the thing is, they just gave Kevin Owens his brand new gimmick. You know, had him out there in the suit, face of America, and then he loses clean.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, I'm definitely not a fan of that finish, but, you know, we'll see what happens, how they try to redeem themselves Tuesday. All right, speaking of interesting finishes, Cruiserweight title, King Neville defending against Austin Aries. These two have had some really strong matches. This is another one. Everything's looking real good. I mean, it was flowing right. You know, okay, you're thinking, okay, maybe this is going to be where Aries wins the title finally. But we have a DQ finish with Neville grabbing the referee by the shirt. And it was interesting. I had somebody note to me on Twitter, and he's like, well, if this counts as a DQ, shouldn't Asuka have gotten DQ'd at TakeOver for grabbing the referee shirt when she worked against Ember Moon? So different strokes for different folks, but what's they going to match? And the finish.
The match was good. I guess you can make the argument with the ref thing that it's by ref's discretion. So, you know, it's the ref's discretion, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess you could, the way you could argue, you know, your way out of that. The match was good. I didn't think it was as good as the Mania match. It was good. The finish wasn't bad. I thought it was a smart heel finish. I liked that Neville's a smart heel. I appreciate that. It was just kind of disappointing. I just feel like I'd like to see the feud end. But I guess they want to get a Cruiserweight Extreme Rules stip match or something between the two in June.
I'm curious that, you know, usually if you're going to do a shit finish, you normally try to do that in maybe the first match of the feud or something like that. This is far from the first match these two have been involved in, and now you're doing that finish. I mean, if they did that in Mania, okay, although with that crowd, it may not have worked. But, you know, it was just interesting that they did that type of finish. And if you're going to do a DQ finish, do a better one at least, I think. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah. I thought it was a clever finish, but it was, like you said, you could point out the Asuka example and kind of see there was some, you know, inconsistencies there with that. But I like the idea of the finish didn't bother me. I just felt like where this is in the feud, it just felt like it needed to have a definitive finish of some kind. I wouldn't even care if Neville had won the, you know what I mean? It's just like I feel like, I don't know, maybe part of me wants Neville to feud with somebody else, even though I do like the Aries feud. But,
well, here's a question then. Should Aries be the one to beat him, or should Neville remain champion and wait for somebody like, say, Tozawa?
I feel like Neville should should stay champion and wait for somebody like Tozawa, like you said, beat him.
Yeah, and you know, we got Grandma Talik, who's on basically main event duty.
Yeah, he and Lindsay are a tag team. They're trying to work him into the style. That's what's going on there.
So, you know, maybe once he gets more accustomed to everything, you know, he could become a player. And you know, I know a lot of folks have like gave up on 205 Live and whatever. But 205 Live has been a really solid show as of late.
There's been lots of good 205 Live matches this year. I mean, it's not this. There's been one or two matches that we can maybe argue were like really, really great. But it's just, there's a lot of solid matches. It's not as bad as people are saying it is. Although I still am not sure that it ever was a good idea to have a show for him, to be honest.
Well, in the way they're doing it, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In the way they're doing it, yes. And, you know, it's understandable for, you know, why that happens. But, I mean, if you gave up on, you at least need to try to, you know, search some of the stuff out. Like the Neville Gallagher matches have been really good.
Yes, and the Gallagher TJP match was excellent.
And TJP turning heel was the best thing that ever happened to him.
Yeah,
you know, he definitely needed that. So that, I mean, they doing some good things. So if you haven't watched it lately, go check it out. And Neville's awesome. Aries is great on the show. So yeah, check it out and go from there. See what you think about it. So it's interesting. All right, moving on to the next match. And probably my favorite match of the whole show. Tag titles. The Hardys, not yet broken, defending their titles against Sheamus and Cesaro. Now, these two teams have been going in on television. They've been doing singles matches. Both singles matches were really good. Doing their little sportsmanship handshakes after the match, although last Monday on Raw, there was a little hesitation. So, we get this match tonight, and my God, Sheamus and Cesaro were out to hit hard, and they were on it. I mean, we had a tooth knocked out of Jeff Hardy's mouth. Matt Hardy's face was looking rough. I mean, these two dudes were bringing it. And Matt and Jeff, of course, they were going at it too with them, you know, giving it right to them too. And I love this match. And the Hardys, you know, got the win. And then after the match, we had the beatdown, which was very interesting considering, you know, Sheamus Cesaro was popping the team. But on the Raw side, there are way too many babyface tag teams right now. And the Revival being out hurt. And I know your brother mentioned this on Twitter.
I think
Dylan,
he's right, too.
That this said. Was supposed to be a Revival spot. So you agree with that?
Yeah, I think the Sheamus Cesaro tag was supposed to happen. But I think it was the Revival was supposed to jump him after the match. So I think they had to turn them heel because they need that, you know, heel tag team. The match was awesome. Yeah, it was really good. The Hardys aren't broken yet, but they're teeth and faces are for sure. So, fucking Jeff got his tooth kicked out of him. I mean, on that kick, that the slow motion, that's had that had to be where it happened.
Yes, it did. Yeah, it was. Yeah, absolutely.
And something that you didn't mention yet was Jeff's ridiculous bump to the floor to start the heat section.
Oh God,
he didn't use the ropes at all to leverage his fall, so he just splatted like on his shoulder.
That's Jeff Hardy. That's what he does.
at 40 years old now.
Yeah, that's why we love him. That's what he does.
Yeah, it was a really good match, and I thought the heel turn was a good idea, and it was a cool beatdown afterwards.
Well, it's classic old school wrestling. You know, like I said on Twitter, you know, when you have like this babyface matchups, and they go a couple of weeks, and you know, they do the sportsmanship type deal, and then you have a match, and you know, the one babyface team or guy loses, and they just get frustrated and go fuck it, you know, and just attack the other ones. And that's an old school way of doing a heel turn. So I was pleasantly surprised when they did that.
Yeah, yeah, I liked it, and I think it's kind of a like, I mean, it's like a personal bummer. Like I actually think the Sheamus Cesaro heel team will be awesome, but I've always been a fan of Sheamus as a babyface, as a worker. I like him a little bit more as a babyface, as a worker. Oddly enough, so and he was just getting back into the fans' good graces again.
So
it was kind of like, oh man, like I honestly like babyface Sheamus, but I mean heel Sheamus is really good too. So I'm not going to complain. It's just kind of like a, oh man, like I was kind of liking the Sheamus Cesaro face team. But
well,
yeah,
thing about Cesaro is that you know this is the first time he's been heel in like two or three years.
Oh yeah, he hasn't been heel since when he and Tyson Kidd first got together.
Yeah.
Because they turned face then. Yeah, so
it's going to be interesting how, you know, because Cesaro is a very babyface centric style worker.
I think he's better as a heel as a worker.
Yeah, I mean, he's better as a heel, but his the weight, the stuff he does, though, like there's Cesaro's swing.
Yeah.
He can't, I mean, you can't do that as a heel.
Right, you're right.
But, you know, the way he works, though, in this time period, will be more over as a face, you know. So it's more over as a face work, but I agree with you as far as the way he works as a heel too. And I'm kind of glad, and I think his personality is better as a heel as well.
Yes, yeah, I think his character is better as a heel too. I agree.
So, I mean, it's going to be kind of refreshing, but another thing that happened in this match was, and like we talked about earlier with the accent, Matt audibly did delete a couple of times during the match. You know, he did the hand signal. So we're getting that way. And after the match on Twitter, Sheamus tweeted out, you know, some about how the Hardys are now, he broke the broken and that and rendered them obsolete. And then Matt come firing back with something. And so there's definitely something in the water here. And, you know, I'm curious to see where they go for Extreme Rules with this, if it goes that far. So, and Sheamus and Cesaro did a segment on Raw Talk, which I've got on pause right now, so I'm going to watch it after we get finished recording, because it looked like they were up there having a good time cutting the promo. So I'm definitely intrigued where this is going, for sure. And why you say Sheamus is better as a babyface worker, I think Sheamus is better as a character, as a heel, too.
Yeah, he is.
And the fans chanted, "You look stupid," tonight. That's the first time I heard that chant in a while as well. Yeah. So, interesting stuff. So in the the Raw Tag Division, we'll see what happens when the Revival comes back in a couple of months. If Sheamus Cesaro are just keeping their seats warm, probably looks like the way it is,
which is fine. That's not a bad choice to keep those guys. You know, they're great workers who'll have good matches. So,
and maybe this might lead down to them beating the shit out of Broken Truth tomorrow, or Golden Truth, excuse me, tomorrow night. On Raw or something.
Yep.
But so we'll see what happens. All right, next match. Probably the match I was looking forward to the most on the show. Women's title. Bayley defending against Alexa Bliss. Bayley in her hometown of San Jose, California. Which they played it up. So you know what that means. But it made sense. It made sense here, I thought. Alexa is the first woman to hold the Raw SmackDown titles. Which is, you know, great for her. Match had really great heat, I thought.
Yeah, it was good.
Alexa, she's not the sharpest inside the ring, but she hits hard. She gives it her all. She's chaotic. I've said this about her before. She's chaotic when she works. I know some people will maybe say she's sloppy. I call it chaotic. And her and Bayley had tremendous chemistry here. And this is maybe Bayley's best performance on the main roster. Do you agree?
Yeah, she was excellent. How good did her offense look all match? Bayley's offense has gotten way better. She's got a Saito suplex she's used. I think she's used it a few times before this, but she's got a Saito suplex that looked real good. That running knee that she hit was nasty.
That was like Mr. Wrestling 2 type shit right there. I mean, she popped her with that knee. Good Lord.
They both laid it, like, because earlier Alexa pulled her, you know, did her best Nikki Sawa impression at the start.
Oh, she was hitting forearms, man. She was throwing bows. I mean, and she was, you know, when she was dropping them knees down on her chest. Yeah. I mean, Alexa always does that shit.
Bayley was really throwing herself into the ring post too hard.
Oh, like, yes.
Like the ring post spot, I guess it was for the finish, before the awesome DDT, by the way, to win the match.
Shocked the hell out of me. Yeah. I know Ambrose uses the dirty deeds. It's not a DDT proper. I mean, this was a proper DDT used for a finish in 2017.
Yeah.
In a title match. Wow.
it was a really good match. Yeah, I thought this was – Alexa looked pretty good in it, too. I mean, I think she still has stuff to work on, but she's really good at the character work stuff in the match.
Absolutely. Oh, she's awesome.
Which is her plus. She's a really good promo. She's got to be the best promo of the women's wrestlers by far. I mean,
Charlotte, when Charlotte's own is up there – but Charlotte sometimes
can be really bad, in my opinion.
Yeah, she's very hit and miss. Alexa is pretty much on the money every time.
Right.
I think. On the money every time.
Well, I mean, she does stuff like she controls the crowd. She shut down those what chants last week.
Oh, yeah.
She's just very good as a character. It's interesting. I still think she's a little bit of work in the ring, but she definitely looked better in this match for sure. Definitely showing improvement in the ring. And like I said, I thought it was a really good match. I think it's an interesting discussion or thing to look up. Is it that champions lose more in hometown in WWE and challengers win more in their hometown? I feel like if the challenger comes to their hometown, they often win. But if you're a champion coming into, because that's an interesting argument and discussion that that the Hales brothers had during the show was kind of, you know, is it like, I think it's more of a champion loses the belt at home, and then they challenger, if like for example when Naomi won it back at Mania. So.
Oh, that's an interesting question. I'm willing to say that it's probably even.
Yeah.
Like, everybody loses in their hometown. It's always a shock when somebody does win in their hometown.
Yeah.
I mean, because it seems like everybody goes down in their hometown. I mean, that's just a running joke. and you know, in actuality, if you can do that and it makes sense because that gets heat. But, you know, if you got to do it the right way.
Sure.
You know, if you've been building something up for a while, building the match up as being in so-and-so's hometown, you know, being a big deal, like if they're a challenger going for the title, and then you job them out, that's bad.
Yeah, like, imagine if Punk lost at Money in the Bank.
Yeah, or, you know, Sasha at Hell in a Cell in Boston.
Yeah, that was...
It's... There's ways of doing it, and
yeah,
I'm not a big fan of doing the hometown person doing the job, but
I think
if it's done right, you know, I won't have as big a problem with it.
Sure, and I'm not upset or anything. I mean, like, I thought it was silly, but I mean, Alexa's good, and she'll be a good heel champion, so it's not like
She just came over. I mean, she knew to win this match. She had to win this match, I think. Because right. You want to build her up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You want to build her up, as, you know, because, hey, Bayley actually getting to beat Charlotte at Mania, that's bigger than losing in your hometown, I think.
Oh, yeah, that's because Charlotte's the star. Like, she's like a top, you know. She's the star of the women's division, WWE.
Because you know, pretty much everybody thought Bayley was going to lose at Mania. So yep. that Charlotte was going to get her win back, but no, she got to go over on her. So that's a big thing for Bayley to have under her belt, and she'll be back. You know.
Oh yeah,
they trade the titles like crazy. So.
they're also teasing the Sasha turn a little bit longer too when she was on the pre-show. So
yeah, and it might be the best to not have Sasha and Alexa work each other all the time because. Those two have history, and that might, I mean, somebody might get really hurt in those matches. they do have a history in their matches, so it might be best to keep them away from each other a little bit.
Not so, a fans of each other in the shoot life, huh?
Well, I mean, it's, I don't know if it's that, but when they work against each other, like, it's two of the same kind.
Right,
two people. That's chaotic going against each other.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And hitting each other hard. And, you know, things happen because, like, it was Sasha, like, I don't know if she broke her jaw in NXT or something. She injured her in NXT in a match.
Yeah.
She kicked her in the face or something like that. I mean, she put her out of action for a while, if I'm not mistaken. I know there was something that happened. So, yeah, these two have a history of stiffing each other, which, hey, I like when the women work like that, you know. Fuck that pussy footing around, you know, and with light work. Go in there, hit like the men do. Shit.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Hit hard, you know. Show that, you know, the women are equal to the men in all ways.
Yeah.
Go out there and punch the shit out of her, you know.
That's what they did tonight.
Oh, God, yeah. And that match was, you know, to me, the second best match on the show. And, I mean, I would have no issues with somebody saying it was their best match on the show. No doubt. Mm-hmm. Well, I know what won't be the best match on the show. Our next match. Now, I've been very vocal about hating this feud. I thought it was complete trash. I hate when they do all the over-the-top shit with Bray Wyatt. I've always hated it. But if you're going to blow this feud off, you need to do the silliest shit you can do, because you didn't built this up with silly ass shit. So if you're going to blow it off, go 100 with it. And that's what we had in this House of Horrors match. Now, when the quick question, because I mean, I knew it, but I don't remember when they officially did it. When was this match announced as non-title?
About maybe a week and a half ago.
Because there were people that were on Twitter, like, wait a minute, I thought this was for the title. And then, I remember when they just basically dropped that.
It was subtle, though.
At first it was for the title.
Yep.
When Bray went over on the, you know, in the shakeup, the match was a title match.
Yeah.
So, and the people are asking that. So anyway, it was non-title match, House of Horrors, and then they announced the rules, which nobody knew before the show, because they may have been making this thing up until the day they filmed it. So, they're not in the building, folks. They have to go to a house, to Bray Wyatt's shack in somewhere near San Jose, California, which I didn't know he had a house near San Jose, California. It's amazing. Maybe next door to Dave's. Who knows? Dave Meltzer.
Or Dave's, it was in Danny's.
Yeah, it's Danny's house. It's Danny Meltzer's house. You know, well, that's what that explains, those bleeding baby dolls on the ceiling, I guess. But I didn't see any leather jackets laying around. Now, what tripped me out on this was Randy Orton comes to this fucking house in a limo. In a limousine. And there he is, looking like he's doing a 2001 white beater from CZW tribute gimmick, with his black jeans, elbow pads. All that was missing was his bag of Lay's chips and Mac Smack accompanying him to the house, and Justice Payne behind him or something. But goes in there, and it's just all kinds of wacky shit. There was stuff everywhere. I mean, it was like, this is like shit you would see on El Rey Network, on their like grindhouse films from like the late 70s, early 80s, where, you know, actors like Rucker Hauer or some shit like that, or somebody who was, you know, on their way to becoming a kind of a bigger actor, but they were still doing B-movie horror films or C-movie horror films. This is what it was. But like I said, if you're going to do some shit like this feud, you got to need to go all out to blow off match. And Bray left the house first because Orton got a refrigerator on top of him and got in the limo and went to the arena. And boy, this was a very polarizing segment on Twitter. And Devin, I know that you haven't been the biggest fan of this whole thing either, but I mean, what is your take on this segment?
Well, first off with the feud, I thought it sucked at first, right? Back in the fall, back in September, when they were doing this spooky crap where Randy was like, you know, they had the like rocking chair in the garage door or whatever. Remember that? And like Randy was like locked in the room, whatever the hell it was.
Yeah.
And then I actually thought it got really good when Randy joined the Wyatts and they did like the dissension angle with Luke Harper. That stuff was really, really good.
That was the best part.
I thought Randy was kind of revitalized, and the Wyatts as the three-man tag team was really good. And then he burned the house down, which I originally liked, but the follow-up of it was so bad that this has turned into a historically bad feud in WWE history. It's so bad. This match was hilarious. At first, I think they should have had Howard Finkel driving the limo.
It's too bad James Dudley's dead. Vince's driver's in the Hall of Fame. He could have been driving the limo.
he should have. Look, I actually don't think it was quite it was over the top, but I think it could have been more.
It could have been way worse.
I think it was bad because it wasn't way worse as far as being over the top and ridiculous. Like, this house didn't even look as bad as a crack house. Like, it looks like the refrigerator, kid was messing around and got permanent marker and drew in the refrigerator. I also think when they were showing the hanging babies, they should have had the baby with the scissors in its stomach with the face of Arne Anderson on it.
Oh!
But they missed a lot of opportunities to do little subtle callbacks like that in the match. I thought it was completely absurd. This wasn't even as good as that wacky hardcore three-way match that I loved when I was a kid with the Raven, Kane, and Big Show from WrestleMania 17, where they went through the wall three or four times.
Oh, yes, like, yes.
This was really, really bad. Although I think the highlight of the match and maybe even in the night was when Tim Evans tweeted at me when Bray came back into the arena, which we'll get to later, and he looked all groggy, selling from the previous encounter at the House of Horrors, and Tim goes, and I was like, Bray fell asleep in the limo. He's groggy. And Tim Evans was like, no, he was just watching his matches in the limo to get into character. Watching his dad's matches. Watching
Blackjack. Or watching Mike Rotunda, excuse me. Mike Rotunda, 1987 babyface Mike Rotunda.
watching IRS squashes on superstars.
Yeah, 1987 babyface Mike Rotunda using the airplane spin as his finisher.
I also like that it was dark outside and someone proceeded to show a photo of being sunny outside because it's 7 o'clock.
That's what Dave tweeted out. Classic Dave Meltzer. He's like, you know, it's sunny here. They're driving in the dark. That was pretty bad. That's definitely bad on their part to do that. It really is.
That's because Bray has the power of Sister Abigail, and he turned into darkness.
Or that limo is, they actually were filming that in Florida, and the limo has teleport abilities where it could teleport from Florida all the way to San Jose. And Orton teleported. Orton was actually like on the back of the limo and teleported with him.
I also said that Dustin just bought the Alexa thing, you know, where you can tell it what to do or whatever for you with your technology stuff. I said when the red light came on, Randy Orton told Alexa to turn the light on.
Well, somebody on Twitter had the symbolism, and I don't know if that was what they were going for. It's like, well, he said, Bray's gone to Raw now, so now the house is red for Raw instead of blue for SmackDown. He turned it red. So that means he won. He won. I don't know if that's what they were going for or not, but I thought that was a cute thing. But yeah, there could have been a lot more stuff involved. I mean, they could have went out into like sheds. I mean, they could have.
My problem is when they were brawling in the kitchen. It looked like a regular kitchen to me. It looks like my kitchen. Looks like there was a domestic dispute where somebody threw the mail across the kitchen.
They could have went to like a basement, and there could have been like all kinds of wacky shit down there. I mean, yeah, it could have been, but I guess that they didn't want to spend too much time. They spent enough time on this. But my thing is like, okay, you're in attendance at this show. Let's say you're in the crowd. How pissed are you?
Oh, God. You sit there and watch this shit for 15 minutes. It was literally that long. I mean, it was like absurd. Although, I will say I was very disappointed in Randy Orton that he did a really poor man's impression of his "what the hell" moment as he stared into the dark house right at the start of the thing, because it was a poor man's Hulk Hogan's "It's not hot," in my opinion. they could have really made it really dramatic, but I think they failed the production there.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that could have been done, but what a segment! It's not over yet. We'll be talking about the return. Now, what match is going to follow that? Seth Rollins versus Samoa Joe.
Babyface Seth Rollins. Jeez.
I fell for these guys, and I liked the match. I thought it was a good match, but they were in a bad spot coming off of that. The crowd was not that interested. They were still trying to recover from what they just saw. Joe would get the coquina, you know, on Seth, and Seth would get the cradle, get a clean pin. And Samoa Joe, I mean, his booking has been very interesting since he's got on the main roster. A, what you look at the match, and B, where do they go from here with Samoa Joe?
I don't know. It's interesting what they're doing with him. I don't hate Joe. He's not somebody who really I'm not into when he works more than like 5 to 8 minute sprints. Samoa Joe's still really good, but I'm not a huge fan of him working longer matches because he's so shot physically, I think. Although I did think this match was solid, and I think Rollins' knee selling was a little bit better this time around than it was at Mania. The finish was interesting. It looks to me like they're just building to a blow-off at Extreme Rules to me. That's kind of what that hinted to me.
Yeah, but Seth won clean.
I know, but the way he won seemed to be kind of cheap, you know, and that's kind of how they put it over, like,
yeah.
he rolled up on him. To me, the way, because of how this feud is, how personal it is, I feel like they're going to go to a stip match because Seth just winning on a clean roll-up seems lame, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like Seth needs to hit his crappy version of Kenny Omega's crappy move to win an I'm a huge Seth Rollins fan, folks.
Absolutely. You, Finn Balor, too.
Yeah. But,
wait till they start working each other again.
Oh, my God. Please. Oh, God.
And bring back Owens and do three ways.
Jeez. Oh, nightmare. That's my house of horrors right there. Gosh.
But, you know, my thing with Rollins is when is Rollins going to escape this whole feud with Triple H and Triple H's underlings?
You know, I don't know. I don't know how they're going to get out of that. I feel like the Authority angle's pretty much over. Like I said, I've said it before on Twitter, I think that's sort of the Triple H match was the end of the original or sort of the
Well, it should have been.
Right. Well,
but here's Joe working as an agent, you know, still, kind of.
Sure. That's fair. But I also think that they had to wrap this Joe stuff up, right? Because Rollins got hurt and he didn't get to have the Fastlane match.
That's true. Rumored to happen. That's true. That's a good point.
So I think they're just kind of – the spring's always a weird time in WWE, and you know that. Like, it's absolutely the post-Mania stuff where they always have a lot of times they'll extend Mania feuds well into the spring, or they'll have two or three – most WWE feuds happen two or three pay-per-views in a row. But, you know, this is typical to me. I think this will probably end in Extreme Rules, and then we'll get a hot summer angle after Extreme Rules. I think we'll start. I think the Memorial Day SmackDown will probably get something big, and then that week at Extreme Rules, they'll start pushing forward to the summer stuff. So I think this is kind of the spring thing for Seth Rollins right now. That's just kind of my guess.
Well, I think somebody's got to turn. There's a lot of high level babyface on Raw too.
Yeah,
you know, Rollins. I mean, you're not going. You shouldn't turn him because you basically just turned him. Ambrose would be somebody, but I don't know if they'll do it.
Yeah, it looks like they might be doing Ambrose Bray again, which is about as. Oh. But that's just as thrilling as a Rollins Owens Joe three way to me. Ooh, boy. Because it looks like, remember, they originally looked like they were going to do Balor and Bray and then Miz and Ambrose, but it looks like they switched it up. So, Miz and Balor and Ambrose and Bray. just based off Raw and tonight.
Well, maybe Bray can blow off Ambrose and we get Rollins and Bray, which would be a fresh feud.
Sure. Yep. Definitely.
I mean, that would be fresh. So,
and it would be kind of a new iteration of the Shield Wyatt's constant little rivalry there.
Yeah. So maybe down the line, but yeah, they got to do something different with Seth, no doubt. It's starting to get way too repetitive. And Joe, you know, who knows? Who knows what Joe's going to do?
He seems lost in the shuffle for sure.
Well, Joe made a statement recently as well that he wasn't really even supposed to go to the main roster. He's always supposed to be in NXT, but they kind of felt like they needed to bring him up. So,
interesting.
Yeah. All right, part two of the Bray Wyatt Randy Orton series. Bray comes back to the arena, refreshed from his teleportation in the limo. And, you know, it's amazing. Isn't it amazing how, now, I know you guys are at Mania. It's amazing to me how as soon as they turn the lights off for Bray, all of a sudden here comes these lights. Now, my question is it really people with their cell phones, or is there some type of juicing up there?
I have been in arenas, indoor arenas, where it was juicing up, but at WrestleMania, it was 110% for shoot people's phones, and it was awesome. At WrestleMania, outdoors, it was everybody's phones, which was really cool. But I have been in indoor arenas on Raws where it's been people will have their phones out. Everybody does, but they also have like Firefly lights elsewhere.
See, yeah, this one, look, the way it went as quick as it did definitely made it look more fake.
Right.
To me. If you guys go back and watch how they do the turnaround and see how quick those lights come up. And nobody got their phone out that quick. And get, you know, like that, and there's no way. So anyway, Bray gets in there, you know, and thinks he's won, and all of a sudden, oh, there's Randy! Wow! Amazing! Showing not the worst of wear. I mean, he's refreshed as well. And he attacks Bray, and they have a brawl, and then the former Bollywood boys show up, attack Orton, and then Orton makes his comeback, and then Jinder!
Yeah.
Jamal shows up, lays him out with the absconded belt, as Michael Cole called it, which I thought was awesome. And, you know, put Randy out, and then Bray took care of him with Sister Abigail and won the feud.
Yeah.
Now, I love what Dave Meltzer said about this. Dave Meltzer said, Jinder was supposed to hit Orton in the head with the belt, but he hit him in the shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
And Dave says, Well, Randy does have a history of shoulder problems.
Didn't mean to cut you off. I knew where that was going. So.
But, we had to know that Jinder was going to be somehow involved in this to continue that feud. So I thought that this was the best way of doing that. And Bray got to get a big win as well, even though it wasn't clean, but still, he got to win the feud.
Yep. Yeah. It was you know, the second part brawl was inoffensive, but I popped for Jinder and the Singh brothers. I'm a Jinder defender. My theory that I just thought of how Randy got back to the arena is that Jinder and the Singh brothers were plotting to go into the House of Horrors, but they were in their Luxor Industries. Hummer limo, and Randy somehow got into that limo and teleported and that's how Randy showed up, and then the Singh brothers and Jinder were chasing after Randy when they found him in the trunk of the limo, that's my theory. But yeah, it was, you know, it's a bit of a tainted win for Bray, but hell, he won the feud. You know, he needs winning feuds bad. It looked like they were going to try to rehab this dude, and you know, he beat Cena clean, remember, twice.
Yeah. Yes.
he beat Randy clean. Or rather AJ, sorry.
Beat AJ clean. Yeah.
So they had him. Then it's just weird, like.
His booking overall has been weird.
Yeah, I think Bray's actually a pretty decent worker in the ring, but I think his character stinks and it's silly. But this guy hasn't been helped by booking at all.
That's why his character is not that great, because it's there. I mean, they haven't helped him.
Yep.
They have done him no favors over the years.
But he needed some kind of win here, so maybe he can get revitalized on Raw. I'm pessimistic about that and doubt it, but we'll see.
Well, you know, going Ambrose.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. But anyway, gender. Jinder Mahal's become like the big deal lately. Roughs up Finn Balor on Raw, gets put on the shake-up, and then immediately gets this big push. I know there are people on Twitter that think that this is kind of xenophobic in a way, the way they're portraying gender. But it's old-school wrestling, you know. It's the way it's been done for years and years.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But, I mean, I don't know. I know you like gender. I know that you've been one of the big gender fans for a long time, but that was mainly just in-ring work, you know. So I know that you've been riding this train for way longer than just anybody else. So
to be honest,
you know the deal. Yeah.
To be honest, Jinder never really had anything that was really anything that special on the C shows. But I thought it was funny that he was kind of hanging around and like clearly on the juice or something.
Hard body Mahal, baby.
Yeah, getting fit, and like it was just really noticeable. And he had the Rusev tag team, which I actually thought was a fun little mid card tag team.
Yeah.
And, you know, he started to have, you know, he started to get a little bit better in the ring. He seemed to be working harder. And I was like, oh yeah, you know, like I'm kind of behind this guy. You know, he's putting effort. You know, it's kind of fun to be ironic about him and stuff. And then I don't know if WWE reads ironic Twitter, but maybe they do, because this guy's gotten this big push, and I think he's done really well so far. I loved his heel promo. Before he attacked, a few weeks ago, you know, and
yeah, I mean, he's good as a character for sure, and I mean,
yeah,
and he hits hard in the ring too. He's another one of these guys that hit you hard.
He's not the
most complete worker around, but he'll throw the shots.
Well,
know?
Just ask Roman Reigns and Finn Balor. He booted Roman as hard as he could in the face, and then concussed Balor. So
yeah.
he's a hard hitter, which I do appreciate. You know, I like crowbars, it's interesting. I'm actually excited and interested about this stuff. It's a little xenophobic, but it's a wrestling. Come on, like just it doesn't bother me. I like it. He's getting good heat. His character's entertaining. The Singh brothers have helped him a lot. I think it's really entertaining stuff.
It's the best use of those two, for sure.
Oh, yeah, with him still on the belt. And somebody else is getting an opportunity and getting pushed, man. Like
a new face, yep.
You know, give this guy a chance. He just now got pushed. Give him a chance. Don't drop him yet, you know. Give him a few months, see how it works out before you start jumping on a guy.
But, you know, a lot of that comes from where some people have to be contrarians. And, that you know, that's just the way it is.
Right,
you know,
I'm looking forward to Backlash. I think there's a possibility Jinder might win. would be really interesting. I wouldn't be mad at all. You know, it would be interesting stuff to see.
I mean, they got Bayface to chase him, so
yeah, and an interesting argument that could be made is if Jinder does become champion, whoever he faces, you never know who he'll lose the belt to, because Jinder is so new and fresh and kind of imaginative and surprising that anybody can beat the guy, you know? So it kind of creates some interesting unpredictability there as well. So I'm actually really looking forward to the Orton match, and I think it's been a good program. I think it's been booked well. So
yes, they've done a pretty decent job so far with it, and they still got some time to work with. So we'll see how it goes down the line. All right. Main event time, the real main event of this show. Some of the best stuff on television in recent weeks. Braun Strowman against Roman Reigns. I love this match. I thought it was really good. Braun is Braun. I mean, he does what he does as good as anybody does it right now. And he knows it. And, you know, a guy like Roman Reigns is a tremendous opponent for, because Roman's going to sell like hell. He's going to take bumps. He's going to work his ass off to, you know, make the match really good. And they did it. They did it here. And I said 2 weeks ago, I said that they need to strike while the iron's hot. Braun needs to beat Roman Reigns, because you can always rehab Roman Reigns.
Oh, yeah,
that's
sure.
Just the way it is, because they're going to push it no matter what. But give Roman Reigns give Braun that win. And, you know, maybe down the line, you know, you could do Brock and Braun, you know, and have that match really mean something, because they haven't done it. They've did some, you know, foreshadowing between the two. You know, but Braun has always walked out before something happened, because he was smart. You do business when I want to do business.
Which I like, by the way.
Which is great. But they gave Braun the win, clean as a sheet. Fans were chanting, "Thank you, Strowman." And, you know, and then as he beat the shit out of Roman after the match, dropped him chest first on the steps.
Which was brutal. Well, the chest or the stairs dropping on the chest later.
Yeah. They did "Thank you, Strowman," even louder. And then as Roman walked out, they were chanting, "You deserve it." To Roman for being getting his ass kicked. And then, just when you think it's all over, the show ends and they're putting the bloody Roman Reigns, not real blood, of course. They did the blood capsule or whatever they did, but he's got his internal bleeding. They brawled again after the show at the beginning of Raw Talk, where Reigns was in the ambulance. Strowman went to attack the ambulance again, and Roman moved, and Strowman got in the ambulance, and then Reigns slammed the door on him a few times, and that's the way it ended. So it looks like they're going to build to an ambulance match in Extreme Rules, which I think would be fucking awesome. But oh, yeah. I know you love these two like I do, and I know that you really like this match.
It was great, yeah. I like this, the women's and the tag a lot. I actually don't know what would be my favorite match. This might have been. Roman's selling was amazing in this match. God, he's so good. His selling is amazing. Braun was really good in this match. I saw some people complain that Roman had too much offense. No, he didn't. He's a top babyface in the company. He's coming back. He's tough. He's trying to make his way into the match, trying to get offense. He does. You know, he gets some near falls, but he's hurt. And he got his ass kicked for like 80% of the match. And he was really, really good selling. The spear near fall was awesome. And was a really good kind of callback to Fastlane, with people kind of thinking maybe, oh no, Roman's going to win. Nope, Braun kicks out. Then they did the callback to Mania, where Roman runs the ropes multiple times, like the finish to the Taker match. Braun catches him in his submission, you know? And then they get to the power slam, which was a great kick out for Roman, and the second one for the win. This was a great, great match. Made Strowman look like a total beast. And badass monster, who's indestructible, made Roman look tough, which is what you're supposed to do as a babyface, but also truly defeated and beaten and badly hurt. The post-match beatdown was nasty. People were like, "Oh, but he walked off on his own." No, he didn't. He had to get help, but he had to get help to the back by like five officials.
Yeah, and he was put in an ambulance.
Yeah, he was put in an ambulance, bleeding everywhere, and then you know. Braun coming out, and you know, Braun was selfish and should have left it there. And he goes in that awesome spot where he runs through the door of the ambulance. And then Roman kind of battles him off. Braun walked off fine, I'm sure. Kayfabe fine. And Roman was the one who sort of survived in some ways, but was badly beaten. And now they got the big ambulance match coming up, which I'm really looking forward to. I thought this did a great job of putting over Braun Strowman as a true threat. I thought this was really, really good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the way they've built this feud up has been really strong, and Braun has gotten so good at what he does. I mean, I can't think of a guy, maybe since the early days of Big Show, that was as big and got really good in a really short amount of time.
Right.
I mean, it's just amazing. And what trips me out about, you know, how people react towards Roman, and we'll talk about this even more in a second, but, you know, they're cheering on Strowman. They're really behind him. Who do you think is Braun Strowman's biggest fan? Vince.
Yes.
Strowman's the guy that Vince.
If you listen to the crowd reactions, there were "Let's go Roman, Roman sucks" chants, but the crowd was getting really into Roman's comeback. Like, people were like, it was the energy and the charisma and the earned comeback was, people were getting behind that, you know, like, and then they remember, oh, we're supposed to not like this guy. Like, come on. Like, I don't know. I mean, like, I don't want to spend this entire time complaining about that, but it's like, look, I get it. You know, Daniel Bryan should never have entered Royal Rumble 2015. And, you know, most of the reason is people resent him for that, but it's like, come on. Like, I don't know. It's like, get over it, man. Roman is here to stay, and he's really good. You don't have to think he's the best in the world or one of the best in the world even, but cut the guy some slack is kind of how I feel.
But do you think, though, that he'll ever get to a point where people will try to accept him as the top guy, as a top baby face, or... Well, that or the time that comes is when he turns full heel, and then they'll flock to him.
Oh, man. I don't know. I don't think that people would probably be all that happy if he stayed babyface. I think he's best as a tweener, who sort of kind of like last year when he was doing the I'm the guy gimmick, and he was like a cocky babyface, sort of like 96 Diesel.
Yeah.
Before Nash went to WCW and was kind of the women and the kids love the guy, but he's having, if you watch like the AJ matches, you know, Roman's kind of bullying AJ in the match, or the Seth Rollins Money in the Bank match, he's like, "How's your knee, Seth?" talking trash to him, and like, he's like the monster in the Shield 3-way at Battleground last year. Like, he wasn't a heel, but he was a tweener, and he was, you know, he had his fans and he had his detractors. I think that's the best book Roman. The thing I will agree with, for the people who dislike the booking of Roman Reigns or whatever, is when you book him like happy-go-lucky John Cena babyface, that's no good. It's not good.
They haven't done it in a while, though.
Right. They haven't done it since, what, the Rusev feud? They did that a little bit in the Rusev feud, right?
Yeah, that's the last time, but that's been way too long.
Sure, yep, I agree, absolutely. And he's been fine since then, you know? Like, it's a resentment. It's a two-plus-year resentment that stems from Royal Rumble and sort of has grown from there.
That's why a lot of people don't like Sheamus, too.
Yep, it's an interesting...
Daniel Bryan.
Yep, it's an interesting phenomenon to kind of see, you know. Maybe the internet does suck.
Well, I think it's this, you know. I think that wrestling fans, if they see something on TV and they see, you know, something get hot, like a chant or whatever, they're going to do it. We see these on indie shows.
Oh yeah,
you know, where people will just they'll bring the chance to indie shows of stuff that has nothing to do with anything. Like,
right.
The last show I went to, the first Bulletproof show, a couple weeks ago, there was a delete chant during a match that made no sense. Why there was a delete chant? I mean, it's like just fans felt like they wanted to chant delete. You know, I mean, it's just. weird, but, you know, with Roman Reigns and John Cena, those two guys, if they see a crowd start doing stuff, they're going to, you know, adapt it. You know, it's like every other catchphrase and chant. That's how what got big. You know, this is awesome. All this stuff, it just catches on. You know, the fans, it's part of the show. It's them being part of the show.
Yeah. You know? I think so, too.
So, I know John Cena has the whole thing, you know, about how, I mean, just long, I don't care what they do, just as long as they react. You know?
Right.
As long as you're not silent.
Right. Although Cena's kind of gotten, has gotten less booze nowadays, if you notice, since his last comeback.
Yeah, he's gotten better.
He's kind of turned around into, like, the favorite legend now, you know?
Yeah, he's old man Cena now, you know?
Yeah.
Although, it's going to be interesting when he comes back now. He's going to be engaged Cena. Let's see how the fans react towards him then. But,
yeah.
That's a whole nother show down the line. But anyway, overall thoughts, thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle, where do you stand?
Thumbs up. Even with the couple of weird booking decisions, I still think it was a thumbs up show because I think it really over delivered. The undercard had the four first matches and the undercard were really, really good. They weren't insanely great or anything like that, but they over delivered and they were good matches and pretty much everybody had good performances. Hot crowd for most of the night too. It was a good show and, I love the Braun Roman stuff. And I thought the booking was pretty strong in that, too. So, easy thumbs up.
Yeah, if you take away the House of Horrors shit, there's no bad match on the show. There's no match that's actually below good, I think. I mean, all the matches delivered proper. So, very strong in-ring show. And it's funny how that's been the trend most years on these post-Mania, the first show post-Mania. Those shows are always good for some reason.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. That's an interesting point to make, yeah. Because I remember Payback and Extreme Rules being two of the better shows last year. The spring shows have always been really good in WWE for years and years and years. It's interesting, for sure.
Yeah, ever since they started the whole thing of where Mania was at the end, you know, and they continued everything on. Because, you know, back in the day, for those of you listening to Between the Sheets, you know that we always, in the 80s and 90s, whenever there was Mania, the next TV tapings afterward, there would be all the new storylines and, like, people debuting and shit like that.
Right.
Mania was the end of a lot of things. Now, you know, it's just the continuation.
Oh, yeah. Well, sure. I think it's like a 50-50 thing. Like, you know, like, they'll have debuts and stuff every year. You know, that's part of, like, the whole Raw to Mania deal. But there's also the other 50% is, like, continuing feuds so we can have, like, big matches at Extreme Rules, you know? So it's interesting.
Yeah, and back in those days, there were no such things as pay-per-views after Mania until, like, SummerSlam. So, yep. I mean, you kind of had time to work. So, yeah, I thought this was, like I said, a thumbs-up show easy. Take away House of Horrors. So, if for those of you that are on the fence and haven't watched it, go check it out. We highly recommend it. All right, on that note, real quick, where are you at in your WWE watching right now? I know you got caught up there for a while. Are you still caught up? Are you behind? Or
I'm the house show stuff. That's going to be a probably year end project, to be honest, because that was honestly it became a chore. The house show stuff did last year, but I do appreciate watching the house shows. So I'll try to get stuff that I'm interested in seeing. I won't watch everything, but I'll look at stuff that looks good on paper and watch that for my end of the year stuff. But I'm all caught up. I actually have all my April matches listed and all the highlighted ones that I am considering in the rankings. So I'll add Payback stuff tomorrow and hopefully get that stuff out by the middle of the week for April.
All right. So who would you say in the first 4 months of the year is the most slept on guy, girl, whatever, talent in WWE right now?
That's a good question. Really, like, really most slept on? That's actually, really slept on.
That's having good matches, but nobody either cares, talks about it, or whatever.
Mustafa Ali, I think.
I totally agree.
he's been really good on 205 Live. He works like a cruiserweight, which gets matches into his, which gets the casual fans into his matches, or he works the American cruiserweight style, rather, I guess you could say, more so than the other guys. So I think he has a natural connection with the crowds that other guys like a Gulak or a Nice might not have because of how they work. He's a really good bumper. He's a good baby face. He has tons of good matches with Neville, and he was really good in all those five-way and four-man matches for number
good
one
match with Tony Nese.
Yes. Oh yeah. Yep. Tony Nese match is good. He's had I think he had like a really good like 5-minute Gulak match earlier this year too. He's got to be the most underappreciated guy in the roster, I think.
I absolutely agree. He is a great choice in that department. Yeah, because. Yeah, you know, we don't see him on Raw much at all. He just mainly works 205 Live, and I mean, he's been one of the guys where every time he works, he's somebody that I want to see, you know, out there. And you know, maybe they'll come up with something for him, you know, like a long-term deal down the line, and he'll get a, you know, more high-profile matches for sure.
Right.
So yeah,
at least a title shot. Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's a good call. That's definitely a good call. All right, on that note, we'll say so long. Of course, if you don't know about Between the Sheets or Exile on Bash Street, go check out SoundCloud.com. Make sure you get the right URL. SoundCloud.com/BTSPod. You can find all our shows there. Patreon.com/Between the Sheets if you want to be a patron. TinyURL.com/BTSAmazon if you want to use our Amazon referral link. So, check us all out there. But we will be back for this part of the podcast stuff on May for Backlash, featuring the in-ring debut of Shinsuke Nakamura, which they're going to hold him out of the ring until Backlash. It's a very interesting, and I kind of like it.
Yeah.
I kind of like it. So we'll see where that, although he's wrestling Dolph. So anyway, we'll discuss that next month. And we will see you later, and so long from the Peach State of Georgia.